welcome to Observations wherever you may be. This is the program that is dedicated to providing additional insights and some audio commentary on the book called Observations for Our Time. Volume 1 of Observations for Our Time will be available both at Clariter's, which is a short-run a book publishing company, and also at Amazon. In a short run to order publication here very shortly. I've almost finished. Excuse me. The copy, the chapters for volume 2, but I've got a little more work on the bone there. Probably another couple of months before I get all the way through the material that I want to include in volume 2, but. Volume 1, which will get us through Chapter 11, we're in Chapter 10 right now of Observations for a Time, is nearing completion. So that's an update on where we are. Kirk is with me here today, and we are going to jump right back into where we finished on the Friday evening Shabbat program and the discussions that Yahweh had with Abraham. At the time, now he was named Abram, and these discussions form literally the basis of the relationship that Yahweh is offering to any of us. There is no other detailed presentation of what is required to participate in the covenant and what the benefits of the covenant are, apart from these which begin in Bereshith, in the beginning, Genesis 13. So just so we start at the beginning of a sentence, Kirk, I want to jump back into 13:14, which reads, Yahweh said to Abram, which means uplifting and empowering father, after Lot, which means concealed from the light, had separated from him, please, I implore you, to lift up your eyes and your perspective and to choose to look from the place where you are. Northward and southward, eastward and westward. And we talked about that at the end of the program on the Shabbat program, Kirk. And there are a couple of just really important insights that I want to reemphasize here. The first is, Yahweh said, please.
Yes.
I mean, that speaks volumes.
Well.
What God says, please. I mean, you name a pagan god or a religious god of any kind that says please.
Yeah, name any leader that says please.
Yes.
Man. Human.
This is the creator of the universe. This is the author of life. This is the biggest, most wonderful entity, most powerful entity. I can't say in the universe, apart from the universe.
Right.
Of course, he's bigger than the universe. He created it.
Created the universe.
And he's saying, please,
of your own volition.
Of your own volition. I implore you. I'm encouraging you. But please. The second thing that I wanted to share is that the next, the verb is to lift up.
Up.
Mm-hmm. NASA. That's what Yahweh was all about. This notion in religion that God somehow wants us to lift him up with in praise. You know, praise services are such and such a time on Sunday morning. You moron. What a disgusting individual you are. To demean God to the point that you would suggest that a superior being would create an inferior being to praise him. It's revolting. Can't you think? God, and very few things really upset me more than a praise service or a praise song or worship. Can you imagine?
Prayer and worship also, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're a pretty down-to-earth, grounded fellow. And so this probably is as impossible for you to picture as it is for me. And I don't claim to be nearly as grounded, but I would say that the idea of creating, you know, if I had the ability to create a living being, and of course you and I don't, but if we did, can you imagine creating an upgrade on the garden slug and having that garden slug genuflect and burp out, oh great Kirk. Oh, Kirk of my making. I love and adore you, Kirk. Let me sing your praises. Oh, Kirk. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
How many times would you have to hear that? I mean, after you just burst out laughing. But how many times would you have to hear that? Where the laughter would just go, I said, oh, that was really a bad idea.
And let's come back here on Wednesday evening.
All right. And if you really needed it, wanted it, and enjoyed it, you'd be a sicko.
Yeah, of course.
God's idea is He wants, I implore you, and because He wants to lift us up. So He's saying, lift up your eyes. Lift up your perspective. You know, stop looking at your feet. Stop looking at the ground. Don't bow down. Look how big the world is. This is just a tiny fraction of what I'm offering you. Look up. It goes on forever. I want you to have the right perspective. And the right perspective is big.
Yeah.
It's expansive. And choose to look. You know, it constantly encourages us to be observant.
Yes.
There's only one way to observe.
The head up. Yeah,
that's
open.
That's it, man. You observe with your eyes. You don't observe with your nose. You don't observe with your fingers. You don't observe with your toes. You don't observe with anything. You don't even observe with your ears. You can listen with your ears. That's a good idea. But you only listen with your ears if you're reciting His testimony in terms of something meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
But you observe with your eyes. Look. Be observant. Pay attention. Using your perception of sight to view, you know, it's we were created by God with eyes to see and things to see.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at things, Kirk, you're the artist, what are we actually seeing?
We are seeing, well, first of all, it comes into you upside down. We're seeing light reflecting off of things. So
that is it. That's the answer.
Yeah.
We're seeing light reflected off of things. Is that all we're seeing? I think so.
Yeah, probably.
I don't think we see. We don't see anything. Yeah, we don't see anything other than light.
Yeah. Oh no, then you'd be dark. You can't see anything.
Yeah, we see. We without light, we would see nothing.
Nothing.
In fact, we'd lose our eyesight. Would deteriorate and be gone in a matter of days if there were no light. But all we are seeing is reflected light. Now, with one exception, the sun and the stars are not a source of reflected light. They're a source of original light. But everything else, I'm looking outside. It's actually snowing outside of my window here. And the white of the snowflakes is absorbing no light and reflecting all light. The black of my wrought iron table is absorbing all light and reflecting nothing but contrasts. A little bit of
that's why you put the charcoal stuff under your eye when you play ball. So
that is right. So they don't reflect. It absorbs and it does not reflect. And, you know, the colors that I see out there, the greens and the blues and the reds, those are all based upon the nature
that particular object.
Yeah.
It's some right. Absorb, some reflect.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, what's kind of interesting is that the color that I see, blue, is actually that object is everything but blue because it's reflecting the blue light.
Right.
But that is the point I wanted to make is that Yahweh describes Himself as light. He says, you know, of all the things that are in this universe that you can gain an appreciation of, the thing that I most like is light.
Mm-hmm.
And so our eyes were designed to see light. You think that's a coincidence?
Not at all.
When God says, I am light?
It's part of the grand design.
You betcha. We were designed specifically to be able to see Him. And you might say, well, I can't open my eyes and see Him. If I could see Him, yeah, I'd believe. Well, if you could see Him, you wouldn't need to believe. And I see Him. I see him and the Yahweh said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, please, I implore you, lift up your eyes and your perspective and choose to look. I see him in those words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God's a spiritual being as light. There'd be no defining edges or specific colors or contrasts if he was specifically here. In fact, if he was, all of God can't fit into our universe. A seven-dimensional being can't fit into a six-dimensional universe. No more than Walt Disney could fit into the universe that he created in 2D for Mickey and Minnie Mouse. But if a fragment of him were visible here, it would just look like the sun. Look like light. And therefore, I couldn't distinguish a thing from his physical presence. And yet with his words, I see him very clearly. Contrast and shades. Perspective. Personality.
So you're saying a guy who's polite, who wishes the best for you,
mm-hmm.
encouraging, is very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And provides and assures you that he will provide all that you need.
And who's open and willing to share his guidance, his instruction as to how you can get the most out of life. It's like a father telling a child, you know, before you run across the room, look up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be looking down. If you're looking down, you're going to run into a wall.
Yeah.
Look up. Get your bearings. Get a sense of where you're going. And then, you know, when you go outside, look up, see the world, take it all in, get a good perspective. And, you know, there is this notion, Kirk, that, and I think it's true, those who are downcast versus those whose perspective is elevated,
mm-hmm.
happy, fulfilled, optimistic versus downtrodden, pessimistic, subjugated.
Well, it should tell you a lot about religion as well.
Close your eyes and bow down.
Yeah.
In fact, most religions would have you, that's the way that you would approach the religion.
Mm-hmm.
Eyes closed, head bowed. And yeah, I was saying just the opposite. I want your head raised and your eyes open. That's how we're going to meet. That's how you're going to see me. That's how you're going to learn what this world I created for you has to offer.
Yeah.
They're the opposite, aren't they?
Yeah. It's going to repeat that. I spent all of yesterday with the word qualm, or not all of yesterday, but hours yesterday with uh-huh. qualm, which reinforces that concept completely.
Yeah. Yeah. Q-U-W-B.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the verb in a slogan that is mockingly used throughout our society that nobody's got a clue what it means.
Kumbaya.
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 Kum is the verb. Ba is the preposition. Ba means in or with.
Yes.
And ya is the familial, affectionate, shortened form of Yahweh.
Yahweh.
And so kum would be stand with Yah.
Right.
Be upright in Yah. Take a stand for Yah. All of those things would be true, probably even more.
Yep.
And, you know, you're not going to raise your eyes and look and take it all in from where you are, particularly when he says, I want you to look northward and southward and eastward and westward. You can't do that on your knees. You've got to be standing up to do that, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's,
these things are so obvious, and they're even preached on, and they, in the sense that the words are repeated, and
yes.
the connection never seems to be made.
No. I would dare say that the enlightened insights we have just drawn and conveyed from this simple statement,
mm-hmm.
apart from what we have shared, has not been shared since they were written by Yeshaya 2,700 years ago.
Hmm.
It is my conclusion that these insights of how important it is that God said, please, how important it is to know that it was Yahweh speaking, how important it is to know that Abraham's name means uplifting and empowering, that God's first statement, the first verb there is lift up, and what that implies, what it means to open your eyes and gain the proper perspective, to choose to look, to be observant, where you are, and then take it all in, all of the insights, including the nature of light and our eyes and these words and what they convey. I don't think that any of what we have just shared has been conveyed in 2,700 years.
I have actually heard preachers talk about lift up, you know, I'm quoting, lift up thine eyes, and such and such, and then by the end of it, we're bow your eye, you know, close your eyes, bow your head, and pray. You know.
Yeah, they only cite no, lift up thine eyes because that's how it's written in the King James. Right. That lift up thine eyes is the way it's written in the King James.
Yeah.
So they'll cite that just because, you know, they want to sound religious. Yeah. But they're not able to show that they have no clue what that means.
Thing before you're bowing, right. Your eyes closed, bowing down.
Yeah.
You're in a Catholic thing, you have to bow down. You have to get down on your knees.
Correct. Because for this express reason, all of the land, the Eretz, the entire region, which to show you the way to the beneficial relationship, Asher, you can see is being observed by you. I literally and continually am giving it to you and to your descendants as a witness forever.
So there's no two-state solution, right?
There isn't even a two-state solution if there were no God.
That's
if
right.
There were no promise, if there were no God, there is no two-state solution. Just two-state and solution is says anyone who utters that is saying, I'm an idiot, I'm irrational, I'm immoral, I have no concept of history, I have no concept of the Islamic religion, I have no idea what is currently happening, I am just so stupid it hurts. That's what it says. It's ignorance personified, even if there isn't a God.
Yeah.
And because there is, it's blasphemous. All right, so this begins with because. Does God need to explain to a lowly man why he's asked him to do something?
No. He chooses.
However, if you're dealing with a child and you're a parent,
and you're trying to raise them.
Yeah. Are you going to get a better result if you explain the reason that you're asking them to do something, or is it you're just trying to impose your will?
Yeah, I would think the former rather than the latter.
Right. So a parent will explain, a good parent will explain the reason that he or she is asking their child to do something because it becomes instructive. It becomes an educational opportunity. And more than anything, then it becomes a sense of, I care about you, which is why I'm sharing this with you. I respect you, which is why I'm sharing this with you, as opposed to, I'm bigger and stronger and have authority over you. Therefore, I'm just telling you. Don't ask why. You just do it. You know, like kings and generals, they don't very often explain why they ask you to do something. They don't very often ask. And if they were to, they're not going to explain why. But a loving father will. Because, key, for the express reason. Kol means all. That's all kol means. Kol means all. Ha Eretz. Now, Eretz can be region, realm, territory, ground. It can mean the land of Yisrael. It can mean the earth. And it can mean rid of the entire material realm. I think all of them are right here. I think Yahweh has given us the entire material realm, including the galaxies that are 15 billion light years away. Like he created it all for us, like he's given it all to us. There's covenant children.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the entire material realm, all the way up 15 billion light years.
As far as you can see, it also includes looking up.
That's correct.
To the great dome up there, and you,
right.
Yeah, you can see yeah, forever.
Yeah, and Eretz really speaks of material realm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he gave him the land of Israel. But I think the same is true, this concept of he has given every child of the covenant an inheritance, which includes the entire material realm, the entire universe.
Wow, staggering.
Yeah, it's staggering. Now, the next word is my favorite Hebrew word.
Mm-hmm.
I've said that so many times. If it wasn't for this word, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be engaged in a relationship with Yahweh. Wouldn't be doing this show. I wouldn't have written these books. It all boils down to this word, which when I first reviewed the word, all I learned is it's an association word. It's a word that denotes an association. So, you know, I was studying Second Samuel 7 through 11, I guess. And in every English Bible, it says, when he sends. Now, this is a prophecy that Hosea would be a descendant of David. And it says, when he sends, I will not spare the rod. And, of course, when I read that in, like, 18 different Bible translations, then wait a minute. If he sends, then he is no longer the perfect Passover lamb. The whole thing is for naught. I said, now how can all of these translations be that way? If it actually says this, then people are believing something that is irrational, impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not that, how could all of the translators be so stupid as not to figure this out? Yeah, I'm not a theologian. I'm not an expert in languages. But I knew immediately it can't say that. If it's, well, it can. But if it does, throw it away. It's wrong.
Yeah.
And so I looked up Asher. And all I had at the time was the Strong's. You know, you won't find Asher in Strong's, in the core of Strong's?
No.
Because it's a preposition. You'll only find it in the back with those other terms that they don't quite know what to do with. And the sad thing about that is that by doing that, Strong's completely misses the boat. That's why I like other lexicons so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Because other lexicons, you look up Asher, and yeah, the first part will be a relational pronoun showing a relationship between things. So, for example, in that passage, when sin is associated with him, mm-hmm. I will not spare the rod. Well, that makes perfect sense. Our sins were associated with him.
Yeah.
But if you read the definitions of Asher, when it's used as a word, as a noun, and as a verb, oh, it's infinitely more revealing and powerful than just establishing a relationship.
That was a conscious effort to do that, you think, or are they just that dumb?
I think that that what happened is that the first translation was the Greek Septuagint. Now, it's something outside of the Torah that would have come during the religious period. You know, probably would have come sometime right around the first, second century.
So that was good enough.
And that was good enough. And then the Latin translators didn't know Hebrew, so they just translated whatever the Greek scribe and Alexandria had written down, and didn't bother to go any further. And you know, that's what happened there. And then when you get the first English Bible translations, they were all translations of the Latin, not of the Greek, and most certainly not of the Hebrew. So they didn't see any reason to change anything. And now familiarity sells. So if you were to try to sell a Bible translation that doesn't repeat the prior mistakes, no one will buy it.
Mm.
So that's the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's one of the words that you've studied, and there would be no incentive for you to, because I wallow all around this one, man.
No,
this is my bud.
Somewhere on it, yeah.
Yeah, this is my bud, and every time you look at it, it takes you further. Asher is so much more than a relationship. It's to show the way is what Asher means. To show the way to the beneficial relationship. Asher is a blessing which encourages us to pursue life the right way, which leads to a prosperous and fortuitous existence, a joyful and happy attitude. It's a narrow, restrictive, and straight path through life to life.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the same all the way through.
What a marvelous word.
I would say that, pretty big word.
Yes. So why am I sharing this? Why am I asking you to look up? And why am I offering you the entire material realm to show you the way to a beneficial relationship, to show you the path to life?
Yeah.
That's why I'm doing it. Now, if you don't look up Asher, if you don't care enough to look at these jewels, each of these words is a jewel. If you don't care to examine every facet of them, then you'll never know that. If you do, all of a sudden this is singing to you. You know, you're having a conversation, and Yahweh's sitting right next to you. You're side by side. But you've got to look at the words. Because all of the land, the entire material realm, which I, to show you the way to the beneficial relationship, to bless you, to lead you to the right way to live life and to life, I am literally and continually giving it to you and to your descendants as a witness forever. Now, what had Abraham at this point done for Yahweh? He made big donations?
No.
Had he...
so far he's bulked away. And he's...
Established a mighty religion?
No. He's
fought a fearsome foe?
Yeah.
Why is Yahweh saying, I'm going to give all this to you? It's a gift.
You can only see what's in him and what the relationship can offer.
Yeah, the only person you would ever do that kind of thing to, give something that's near and dear to you, the thing that is nearest and dearest to you, the only person that you would do that to is a husband, wife, son or daughter. That's really it.
Yeah. Family.
So
familial.
Yeah, family. So to say I'm giving you this place that is the nearest and dearest to me, that I created to engage in a relationship with humankind, says that you may be 70 years old, but I'm looking at you as my son. I'm a little older than you are.
Yeah.
And so from my perspective,
yes, you're
my kid. I'm giving it to you. Nathan, who? I am actually and eternally bestowing it and granting it to you, offering it as a gift for you to receive, call him perfect, actually and continually, and to your descendants. Wa la zera ata.
Seed.
Yeah. So that your offspring can approach and your seed can draw near as a witness until next week.
Olam is like cold.
Yeah. You know, until Jebus.
Exactly what you think it means.
Until Jebus comes along.
Yes, until Paul.
Until Paul contradicts everything that I have written, comes up with a better plan.
Yeah.
Until Muhammad.
Vomits
out the Quran as a witness. Do you think that Yah knows a little bit about Ad Olam as an eternal witness? You think that when he says witness forever, do you think he's got a concept of time like that?
I think he does.
So is there any chance whatsoever
he misspoke?
Yeah, that there could be a addendum to this, a new deal?
No.
A New Testament? A two-state solution?
Oh.
A Quran, a New Testament, a Talmud. This witness is forever.
And when you think about it for even a few minutes like this, it's so ridiculous. It makes all the arguments silly against this. I mean, basically, you know, how could you draw anything else? All you can do is right. change the words so you don't read it this way.
Yeah, either that or ignore them.
Yeah.
Either change them, twist them, or ignore them. Mm-hmm. Those are your options. Or you can reject them.
Snore. The snorer or the guy who yeah. goes back to Babylon. Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't know how the Christian and the Muslim rejects them. Or it's just mind-boggling to me because they both derive 100%, as does Judaism. Mm-hmm. All three religions derive 100% of their credibility from this text being inspired.
Yeah.
And yet this text is 100% contradictory in every possible way to their religion. And it just gets back to the point, the only way you can be religious is to be stupid.
Yeah.
You have to be ignorant and irrational. That's, you know, ignorant and irrational, the simple term for that is stupid.
About an hour ago, I read the commentary from, I think it's Jensensis, the Hebrew Chaldean lexicon, on Yahweh, on Yahweh's name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a page of it, and small print, a lot of stuff. Every argument is so lame, it's pathetic. It's just totally pathetic. And he's just citing all these different ones. The rabbis did it this way. They did it this day. They were trying to do this. And they said it was too holy to speak, you know. And then all these different letters can be pronounced this way, and they used, and there are no vowels. And every argument that you've ever written about is right there. I just had never read it before, but today I flipped it open. And you have to be an idiot.
Yeah, to believe the muck that Hebrew is a consonant-only language and there are no vowels
mm-hmm.
means that you have to completely ignore the pronunciation of every Hebrew word.
Yeah.
You have to pretend like this alphabet has 17 letters, not 22.
Mm-hmm.
And that the words like Torah and Elohim and Shalom just magically appeared pronounceable, and that the letters that provide the vowels in them must just be silent, and somebody secretly figured it out. As a matter of fact, those five letters that can't be vowels in them must be put there just to lead us astray, because we're not making a consonant sound with them, and they're consistently presented as vowels. Huh, I wonder why they're there. It's as obvious as the nose on your face that there are five vowels in the Hebrew language. And this argument, you can't pronounce the name because it's a consonant-only language. Then how in the hell do you learn how to pronounce Torah? How did you say Shalom? How did Dod know what his name was?
Mm-hmm.
How did Abraham know who Yahweh was talking to?
Now that makes it ludicrous.
Oh, of course.
Now, why in 2,700 years we're having this conversation? This should have been so.
You know, Kirk, I'm. This sounds too incredulous to be true. So I'm going to make the statement anyway, and if I'm wrong, then I'd love to be proven wrong. In the last 2,700 years, I have not seen evidence of anyone mocking the argument that Hebrew is a consonant-only language. I've not seen anyone say, no, there are five vowels, here's the vowels, here's the sounds of those vowels, and you don't need the diacritical markings to pronounce these words. And that Yahweh's name is as easily pronounced as is any other word in the Hebrew language, none of which anyone argues about the pronunciation. All straightforward. Maybe there's somebody else that has done that.
Well, I got a lot of books. I ain't found it.
I didn't find
you
it either.
Got more, but same arguments. Every argument that you ever has ever been brought up is.
You know, and it might sound like for a moment that I'm bragging, saying, "Well, you know, the first person to do all this thing in 20." No, there it wasn't
mark why.
Hard. It wasn't hard.
Yeah.
I don't have any credentials that made it possible for me to do it, and where it wasn't possible for anybody, it was easy to do. Now, I will say, we have an advantage. I live in a free society, as do you. Sure. Reasonably free. I can choose to spend my time as I wish to spend it. I have access to books. They are not banned from me.
Yeah.
And I have copies of the Dead Sea Scrolls. I've got copies of the Masoretic Text. And I have tomes of lexicons and dictionaries. And I'm blessed also with access to the Internet. So if I'm looking up a word, like today I was looking up, you know, what's the history of Moab?
Mm-hmm.
I can Google it. I can find out a ton. You know, I've got my own resources, and I can Google it and find out even more. It's just we live at a marvelous time where we have the tools and the time and the freedom to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But there's 7 billion people on the planet, Kirk.
Yeah. Why you?
Yeah. Well, alone. I mean, I understand why me. I wanted to. I understand why you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of want to.
It must be.
I mean, I don't think there's anything more to it than a want to.
Yeah. You want it bad enough, you'll say, okay, there it is.
Why do so few people have the want to?
That's a total mystery to me.
Yeah, and for a time, I will cause your offspring to be comparable to the earthen nature, the afar of the land, so that if an individual is able and capable of understanding the process of deriving a conclusion from this regarding the earth and nature of the land, so also your descendants will be considered. Now, that's not the way it reads in your average English Bible.
No, that's dull.
And then what they want to say is your descendants will be as plentiful as the dust of the earth. Well, that's not true. I don't care how you evaluate the mineral composition or the particulate composition of the land of Israel. There is no comparison between the particles that comprise the dirt, even of the surface, and people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So, since God created the particulate that comprises the land of Israel and can count how many descendants there were of Abraham, that wasn't what he was trying to say. And would you please tell me, why is it an advantage to have, why would it even be considered a benefit for Abraham to have a billion descendants, 1 million descendants, 100,000 descendants, 1,000 descendants, or one? I mean, I can understand the difference between zero and one. That's family.
Mm-hmm.
But what's to be gained by going from 1 to 1,000? It's like, you know, there's a program on that my wife was watching when I walked into the bedroom the other night, and it was Sister Wives.
Okay.
I said, what's wrong with these guys? Why would you want more than one wife? I mean, that just seems like the dumbest idea in the entire world to me.
It didn't help Solomon, did it?
No. You know, It's marvelous to have a child, a couple of children maybe, three. By the time you get to four, you're depriving one.
Of something.
Of something. You just don't have enough time to give. And it restricts what you can do. So 100? Sorry. Not enough time or love to go around. 1,000? Ridiculous. 1 million? Preposterous. there aren't 1,000 people out there that I'd even want to be part of my family. Even if given the opportunity to know everybody's character and intellect and contribution and attitude, I think it'd be darn near impossible to find 1,000 people that say, hey, that would be a good thing. I wish they were part of my family.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we're pretty finite beings at this point.
Yeah.
It's hard for us to deal with that many of anything.
So let's consider what these words mean from a cerebral perspective, from a perspective of showing Asher of the path to life and the benefits of the relationship. So that's why that's the way I translated it. And if you want to render it a different way, have at it, but it's got to make sense.
Yeah.
And for a time, I will cause. And this is Sim. For a finite period of time, without ongoing implications, I will actually appoint, put, set, and locate, even preserve. Call perfect. We went from the imperfect to the perfect. There's a big difference between those two. You know, from the time of Abraham to the time that this opportunity will end is, 4,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah,
4,000 years might seem like a lot of time for you. It isn't much when you're talking about eternal gifts.
Yeah.
So the time of opportunity to respond to the eternal witness and the eternal gift is limited to 4,000 years for the descendants of Abraham. So it's a limited period of time that your offspring will be comparable to, will be according to, will be like, by way of, this is a comparison word, the earthen nature. Now, this is afar. There are three Hebrew words for ground. Adamah, which is the primary Hebrew word for ground. It's the feminine of Adam, the name of the first man.
Mm-hmm.
So, Adamah. Eretz actually means ground.
Yes.
And that's why I translated material realm,
mm-hmm.
land. Earth in the sense of, the dirt.
Right.
But afar is literally the particulate, the dirt, the dust, the ash, the powder, the ground, the debris, that sort of thing. The stuff that is matter.
It makes it up. Yeah,
it's matter. And so we are currently material beings. We're physical beings. We're comprised of the elements of the earth. We're a carbon-based life form. We're comprised of matter. We're physical beings. That is our limit on time.
Mm-hmm.
We're physical beings with a soul that no scientist has ever been able to figure out what it is, this consciousness that animals have. And we're many of us have, most of us, hopefully, a nesama, an ability to reason. But every other part of us is material.
Which begs the question, why would you want it later?
Yes.
You don't want to be risen from the dead.
That's why bodily resurrection is a really bad idea. Being physical is highly limiting. But while this period of time, mm-hmm. while we are comparable to earthen material, where we are comprised of, physical elements of the land, so that if an individual, on the condition, and this is so that Asher, on the path to life, an individual-ish, a person, is able and capable of understanding, has the ability and the capacity of comprehension. That's the word that changes the definition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, comprehending how many specks of dirt there are in the land that he could see, and equating that to numbers of people, that's a nonsensical approach.
Yeah, very much.
But comprehending that this offers for a limited period of time because we're physical material beings, and that has all of those kinds of limitations built into it. Now, comprehending how that fits into this whole relationship, That's a catalyst that we can use to expand our horizons.
Mm-hmm.
But yakol is a understanding word. It's a comprehension word. And so is, by the way, the word that follows it. Deriving a conclusion, mana. So if an individual is capable of understanding the process of law, deriving a conclusion, mana.
Mm-hmm.
Mana is the is one of the ma words. And the ma words are all who, what, where, why, when, and how. Those are the questions that you have to ask if you want understanding. Who's talking? Why is he sharing this? When was this offered? And, you know, when will it continue? Tell me when it no longer becomes relevant.
And to whom, yeah.
Yeah. Where was this conversation? Yeah. To whom was it given? How can I capitalize on it? How can I understand it? What is being conveyed here? How does all of this work? Mana is one of those words. It's the who, what, why, where, how, and when of this feminine. But it's basically the feminine of ma. Determining the quantity of things or assessing their state as they relate to others, contrasting the portion that is fed and favored as compared to the whole, assigning and appropriating those who are prepared from man to question the nature of things, particularly food, and especially mana. So God is laying it out. If you're able to understand this, if you can process what I'm saying, then you can benefit from it. The offspring that I'm talking about from Abraham, which are the children of the covenant, are going to have to recognize that they're currently material beings and that that is what makes all of this time sensitive for them, even though my offer is eternal. And they need to be capable of understanding, engage in the process of deriving a conclusion by making a connection between all of these things. The smallest details regarding the earth and nature of the land and also your descendants will be considered. So if you want to be considered by God, this is again mana. If you want to be counted by God, if you want to be known by God, the only way to make that happen is to engage in the process of understanding. Think about what he's saying.
That
makes sense of it.
Yeah. She'd like to say, yeah, that's absolutely. So he's told you everything, the who, what, the where, when, and why, didn't he?
He has. And he will continue to reemphasize it. So this is written specifically to convey how it is that we go about being considered by God. Because if you're not considered by God, then your soul is going to, go away. It's going to cease to exist. Your physical body will deteriorate and crumble and die, and your soul will cease to exist. I did a bit of an analysis. I'll just share a little bit with you. Is that, you know, what may not seem like a lot, but present-day Israel is 8,000 square miles. And Yahweh's gift was much larger, not that that matters in this instance. So if we were only to skim the surface, 1,000 grains times per 1,000 grains per square foot times 27,878,400 square feet divided by per mile, I should say, times 8,000 square miles equates to 23 with 3, 6, 9, 12 zeros after it. Yeah, I guess that would be 223 trillion. That would be correct. Descendants. And thus they number in the hundreds of trillions. This is an example. He's just used to say, that's not what Yahweh was talking about. So we have to get into the meaning of the words.
Mm-hmm.
Afar, mana. understand what God is trying to get his Abraham's descendants to think about.
Yeah.
Did you check these words? Did you find justification for translating this way? I mean, obviously you'll find justification.
I mean, you can say all that kind of thing, but it's just the whole context of it speaks against that. I mean, it's not how many children he will have and how many descendants he will have, and the grain, you know, like the comparison of the grains and sand. Okay, all you've done then, what have you got after you did it? All you've got is, okay, there's a number.
Right.
What do you learn from that?
What good's the number?
Yeah, so what?
Okay. So what?
Okay, you blessed him and he had a great big family.
Yeah.
Okay, is that the significance?
No, you know, he had one son with his wife, and that one son had two sons, and one of them didn't turn out to be so good. And the one that turned out to be good, Jacob, had 12 sons.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. That's what I mean. So where do you go from there?
You're
going to look up the words a little deeper and say, well, okay, well, what else might Yahweh be saying, since how he is the creator of the universe and the smartest guy everywhere,
right,
in every dimension? So surely he's trying to say something more than that. And, of course, we just considered that. And I think, obviously that's what he's talking about.
Correct.
See the bigger picture.
So choose of your own free will to actually stand up. There's your friend Coombe.
Yeah.
Electing to...
Well, let me finish the statement and return to it.
Yeah. Choose of your own free will to actually stand up. Electing to walk independently of your own initiative. Well, stand and walk. There's a good combination. Through and within the land, the material realm. Approaching her length in addition to her breadth. Because... for you to approach, I am genuinely giving her to you forever. So choose of your own free will. Now, why do you think I added choose of your own free will to the concept of kum, which just means stand up?
Well, I can force you to stand up. I can point a gun at you and you'll stand up. Most people would. So it has to be something that you choose to do, because it's a relational thing and it's a familial family thing. So if you don't want to be here, don't do these things. He's talking to somebody who wants to genuinely join him.
Yeah. How about the fact that it was written in the imperative mood?
Yeah, that too.
The imperative mood conveys free will in the second person.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the purpose of the imperative mood is, to convey free will in the second volition, in the second person. So it was written in the imperative mood to be read. Choose of your own free will. Choose of your own volition. Elect. And I hope this is what you want. It may be what I want, but I want you to want it.
Yeah.
Choose of your own free will. And, of course, the fact is written in the call stem. The call stem is not nuanced. It establishes a genuine, actual, literal relationship between the subject and the object.
Yes, simple active, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, simple active. So choose of your own free will to actually stand up. Elect to rise up on your feet and take a stand. Become established. Fulfill your purpose, enabling the means to restoration.
So let's see what I got.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. On Qualm. It answers the question, kneel versus stand upright, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
When you look up the verb, it says to rise and stand up or stand. And it always means that. It's used like 627 times, so it's nothing else you're looking for. And then what I did is I looked up how it was used. And you have, and this was really interesting to me, and I hope I don't bore y'all. It's used like after lying down from sleep, and I put in parentheses snoring, sickness, and sickness from a plague. Well, how about a plague from plague of death?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the plague of death, which is Pauline Christianity.
We've all been there, you see, so I'm taking this really personal. I've been asleep.
Right.
I've snored through life.
And I have too.
I've suffered from the plague of death. And I finally got up and stood. Also is used from kneeling, from obedience. And the minute you see that, then you know we're talking about religion.
Right. And it's the antithesis. It's the antithesis of kneeling, the antithesis of obedience.
Yeah.
Kum is to be established on your own.
Yeah.
To fulfill your purpose.
You from those things. I mean, it's to be a more obvious separation from kneeling down, laying down to standing up and engaging in a welcome.
Right. Yeah. You know, what's amazing, too, is that Kum is written without the hey. You know, the hey is the stand-up word, the stand-up letter in Hebrew.
Yes. I find that a lot of times, well, not a lot of times, but several times you'll find a word that's different. But it is looking at the horizon. And it is, has the next letter is an increase, the wall, the increase letter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you're increased by the help of the set-apart spirit, which...
Yeah, the living waters.
Refer to the end.
Yeah. Living waters. Yeah, you know, it's, I think it's interesting they would have used Kum in this case because the hay, which is the person standing up, reaching up to God, the hay suggests that you're reaching up to Yahweh's hand for him to lift you up.
Yes.
And, you know, God's saying initially, I want you to stand on your own so you can walk because we're going to walk together. We got a lot of things we're going to do together. And, you know, the big heavy lifting I'm going to do later as part of this agreement. But just right now, I'm just asking you to choose to stand up and let's go take a walk together.
Mm-hmm.
So this Kum is the first letter is the horizon.
Right.
You know, he just said, I want you to look up, gain a perspective, look, you know, check out everything that there is to see.
Look at the earth and the sky.
Right, the earth and the sky. And the letter Q, Kof, is... That's what it conveys.
Strong, strong like a line through the horizon, like a setting sun, a rising sun. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and the wa is the tent peg.
Increase.
Yeah, and it means to increase, to add to.
Yeah, increase the family, increase you.
Right.
More so. Yeah.
Right. And the mem is waves on the water. Water is the universal solvent. God's going to clean us, and it's the source of life.
Yeah. The waters of life.
That's right.
Drink into the waters of life, too.
Right.
Further, it says, arise from the state of bending over or from being dead. That's religion.
There you go. Yeah, arise from the state of bending over and from being dead.
Or from being dead, yeah.
So that's if you use this word to free yourself from religion, to separate yourself from religion, rather than die, you'll live.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Then it says it's also used to rise is to come on the scene as a leader, a prophet, a king, like a shepherd king.
Mm-hmm.
Another way is arise to go somewhere is implied in this.
Yeah, when you're on your feet, you're prepared to walk.
You're readying yourself to go somewhere, go down this path.
Yeah, so you know it's interesting too, just the antithesis here, Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than the first thing that Billy Graham would have said is, get down on your knees and bow your head and have a profession of faith. First thing that, I was telling everyone, get up on your feet. Open your eyes and look up. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love the contrast.
So arise and go somewhere, and then arise to confirm or to establish something. Well, you rise up on the upright. The upright pole was to establish something. The standing upright, the arise and stand and endure and persist. Now, that immediately I went from Yish Sarah El.
Yes.
And then to establish, and they say, and of course the lexicons say to, and the translations from the lexicons always say to establish the law when I put a question mark. So I looked it up and I said, what are we talking about? We're talking about eduth, which is testimony.
Correct.
So we're rising up to make a statement of his, or to tell his testimony.
Yeah, regarding his eternal witness.
Right.
We'll be back this Friday.